Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast, coronavirus Zoom meeting edition of the show, or episode 163. I'm Matt Cause. Bob, how you doing?
Good, Matt. What might surprise people is that you and I are clowns, but when we used to do radio together, our morning meetings were very efficient.
Yes.
And very focused. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because I am an idiot in all things, unless they pertain to organizing a show.
Yep.
In which case I become essentially Captain Raymond Holt from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I am humorless.
Yep.
Joyless. Maybe a little critical. So yeah, I like this Zoom meeting thing. To go back to your original observation, it makes me feel like we're doing meetings for the old show again.
Exactly. We can see each other. I find it it works a little bit better than Skype. There's fewer of those awkward pauses between the two of us. So yeah, no, Zoom has been working. We will get to May the 4th be with you day. Mm-hmm. Silence of the Lambs is on AMC between 2 and 4 o'clock. Which is when I do game day on TSN, but I'm doing the morning show. But there's one thing we forgot to get to last Friday. You were saying that CeCe was up late on Thursday night, and I made the joke, was she binge-watching all the Die Hard movies? And you said, ask me about it on the pod. Forgot to bring it up, so I wanted to bring it up. I wanted to bring it up now. I don't even know if you still remember, but
I do, actually.
Yeah.
I do. It was a funny moment in the history of a family because Sandra was upstairs and I think she drifted off and I was on the couch with Charlotte and we were watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yep.
And I drifted off. And so it was 11:30 and she just kept going and going while the parents slept. And I think it might be the first time where she had the surreptitious binge watch.
She was in charge. Parents are...
She was in charge of the house. We left her the keys.
Yeah, at that point, she was the captain of the ship when mom and dad were asleep.
So true. And I think this is one of the first steps towards becoming a teenager is when you realize your parents are getting older and they can't keep up with you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I had a good laugh when I woke up on the couch and it was past 11. And I had a little bit of drool on the side of my face and... She's sitting up there like happily chomping on potato chips, watching her 15th straight episode.
She must have just been in heaven at that point.
It's such a great moment when you realize you can defeat your parents whenever you want. You just got to play the long game.
And just the freedom. I'm just going to watch another episode. Do I have to ask mom and dad if I can have more chips? No, I do not. Maybe she did. But she would say it in a quiet voice.
Maybe I said no.
She was like, hey, Dad, can I have chips? I'll take your silence as an acceptance of me eating more chips.
It's funny. I have a ton of controversial opinions today.
All right.
A ton.
Yep.
So we should start with some of your takes, because once we get into mine, they're going to be fire.
Okay.
And I'll probably ramble. So why don't we start with a little cause time?
Okay, we'll do a little NFL from the weekend. There was a couple of players that the NFL did not extend and give the fifth. NFL teams didn't give the fifth-year option, which is something teams can do with first-round draft picks. The big one was Mitch Trubisky. And the Mitch Trubisky draft is the single greatest draft blunder in the history of the NFL draft. More than Ryan Leaf, Jamarcus Russell, maybe even Tony Mandrich. The Packers took like second overall in 1989. The Mitch Trubisky one is the single greatest blunder in draft history.
Okay, so that's going to require some explanation, I think.
I will give it. I just wanted to at least throw it out there and back to you before I continue. So In that draft, 2017, San Fran was drafting number 2. Chicago was drafting 3. Chicago traded away 3 or 4 picks to move up one spot to switch with San Fran to draft Mitch Trubisky. One thing we know, San Fran, their first 4 picks were all defense. So why did Chicago feel the need to jump up one spot when the 49ers were going all defense? The second point is obviously the fact that Mitch Trubisky has not been given a 5th-year option. So Chicago, they're probably going to let him go after this year. They signed Nick Foles. Then on top of that, Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes were sitting there waiting in that same draft for the Bears, who overlooked those guys and gave up picks to get Mitch Trubisky. And final thought here, when the Chargers took Ryan Leaf, they didn't move up. They just took him. And a lot of people love Ryan Leaf. As for Jamarcus Russell, that draft had no good quarterbacks. The next quarterback taken, there was only one other first-round pick. That was Brady Quinn. So, you know, it wasn't like there was that version of Mahomes or Deshaun Watson waiting that the Raiders could have done. So for the Bears, horrible.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, the year Donovan McNabb went number 2, didn't Tim Couch go number 1 to the Cleveland Browns?
Yes, Tim Couch went number 1. He also had Achilles Smith and Cade McNown in that draft.
Right. So what's worse, trading up and getting it wrong, or staying where you are and picking the wrong guy by a country mile? Like, this is the Sam Bowie factor, right?
Yeah. Because, I mean, Bowie got injured, and actually he was pretty good as a rookie. And at least Portland had Clyde Drexler.
But he wasn't Jordan.
No, he was not.
Everybody's giving them a free pass because you took Olajuwon first, which was not crazy. And he was a Hall of Fame player. Right. But this is the, we'll call it the Couch McNabb factor. Like, what's worse, missing on a great player or trading up to get a bad player?
I think trading up, because you're losing a lot of draft capital. So I think trading up is the worst one. And also just, they could have just waited and got those other quarterbacks. There's another thing to consider. Also, in that 99 draft, there was also Dante Culpepper. And the very least, Tim Couch, he had some productive moments. And, I mean, Cleveland was going to destroy whoever they had, because that was when they had came back into the NFL and were back in Cleveland again after being out of the league for a bunch of years back in 99. They both stink, but I think moving up is worse.
And that's probably especially true in the NFL, because something like a third rounder in hockey, you know. But third rounders in football routinely turn into decent contributing players.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the numbers
the draft's
are out
much deeper. Yeah. It's much deeper. It's the analytics, the charge for pushing to keep your picks is a lot stronger. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, it's funny you bring up Trubisky, because, like, I can't tell whether the story is more interesting as a Trubisky failure or a Nick Foles here we go again. Like, I feel like on the back of his jersey, instead of Foles, it should just say, my bad. Because he's now officially the guy you bring in when your team is screwed up who they thought was going to work.
Oh, yeah. The Jacksonville and now Chicago. And the dirty secret about Nick Foles, and it's not really a dirty secret. Listen, he was phenomenal in that playoff run. He was phenomenal against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. But he was also in such a great situation. They didn't have one A-plus receiver or running back, but they had a lot of B's and B pluses, and they had some A pluses on the offensive line, a really smart coaching staff. You know, Foles was in almost a perfect situation. He's not like that with Chicago.
Okay, so can I leaf it up?
Yeah.
All right, so here's my Leafs comparison. He's Dave Boland. He looks great when he's with the Chicago Blackhawks. They win. He's a real contributor. You want a guy like that, someone who just brings a winning attitude. You overpay him, you bring him to Toronto, and he stinks.
Yep. Yeah,
exactly. You dump him, I believe it was, to Florida. He ain't good there either. You know why? Because he was a hardworking, decent player on a team of Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And GMs get sucked into the idea of he's a winner.
And when you beat Brady in the Super Bowl, and he was so good. I can see how you
so good.
I can see how you would get sucked into it. It's just, I don't know, like the best case, it feels to me like same thing with Andy Dalton. The best case scenario, the best, is you're going to make the playoffs as a five seed and you're out in the first round.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought up Andy Dalton here. Do you mind if I switch, because I had some NFL questions about Dalton with you.
Yeah.
If he goes to Dallas, well, he goes to Dallas. What I mean to say is if Dak Prescott goes down,
yeah,
can Andy Dalton win with all the receivers they have there?
Yes, because when he was in Cincinnati, you know, that 5 years when they made the playoffs, I went back and I was looking at the rosters. There was great tight ends. There was always A.J. Green. There was often a really good second wideout. They had Kenny Hill, Giovanni Bernard, like good running backs. I mean, their careers were short, but they were very productive. Andy Dalton was always surrounded with a lot of talent. They'd win 10 to 11 games, and then they lose to T.J. Yates and the Texans in the first round of the playoffs.
All right, so I actually like getting Dalton as far as the backup to Dak Prescott goes. It's good insurance for a team that wants to win now and always wants to win now. Here's my question for you. So Cam Newton is persona non grata in Carolina, right?
Yeah, well, he's gone. He's free.
Right?
Yeah.
Who will history remember more favorably, the career of Andy Dalton or the career of Cam Newton?
I think it'll be Newton because he won an MVP and he went to a Super Bowl. Dalton always got eliminated on the Saturday afternoon playoff game. They would always give Cincinnati. They would never give the Bengals one of the primetime slots for the first round of the playoffs. So I think it'll be Cam Newton. The ceiling was higher there.
I think you're right. But when you look at some of the numbers that Dalton put up with A.J. Green in Cincinnati, they're actually really impressive. And he put together, I believe it was 6 consecutive years of 3,000 yards plus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So,
you know, like, I think we love Cam Newton's talent and the big personality, but when you actually, like, take that one run that Carolina had from the Super Bowl out of it, Dalton had the better career.
He did, absolutely. Cam Newton will always have 2015. Ooh, okay, you ready, Bob? Right. You ready?
The miraculous year. Yeah, okay, go for it.
Here's my analogy, and I'm going to use two actresses that are often linked together, Christina Applegate and from Something About Mary, Cameron Diaz. Cameron Diaz will always, always have Something About Mary. But beyond that, you know, she's been fine. Some moments here or there. Christina Applegate never had that one great one. But she was always good as the backup. She was good as the comedic foil. And you know, she was great throughout Married with Children. And that's Andy Dalton.
That's not a bad comparison.
I feel I'm giving a little bit of short shrift to Cameron Diaz, but
I think that's the problem, you know. But like Cam Newton, for a while, she was at the top of the game.
Yeah.
Right? Like there was a kind of a superstar quality that Christina Applegate never had.
Never had. But Christina Applegate was always, you throw her in anything, and she's always going to give you, always going to give you a solid performance.
What's Cameron Diaz's best movie?
It's Something About Mary.
Yeah. Okay. So what's your second best movie?
Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, she actually really is good in it. Yeah. Those movies are underrated. Okay. Who plays more games in the NFL as a starter from this point on? Andy Dalton or Cam Newton?
I feel like it's Andy Dalton just because of health.
See, Dalton, I think, is 32, but he feels like the kind of guy who's going to be like a John Kitna, where he's going to be around the league now for like the next 8 years.
Oh, yeah.
As the guy with the clipboard picking off 2 or 3 starts per year, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's like a better version. He'll end up being a better version of Brian Hoyer. Like Andy Dalton, mark my words, in 2028, you're going to be watching an NFL game and you're like, hey, look, Dalton's still in the league. That is absolutely going to be Dalton, while Cam Newton is going to be hosting America's Got Talent.
Right.
And be very good at it as well.
You know, we wanted Cam Newton. It was better in terms of his career than Robert Griffin III. And in both cases, it felt like something special was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it just didn't. And as a fan, that sucks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like the Cam Newton not playing at a high level hurts us all. His first year as a rookie put up tons of numbers, and then, you know, up and down. But 2015 was a really special year. Then just got dummied by Von Miller and the Broncos and was never the same again. The following year, the Thursday nighter, where the Broncos took on Carolina again and launched human torpedoes at Cam Newton's head for four quarters.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. It's kind of, it underlines the miracle of Ben Roethlisberger to be that big quarterback who can take a lot of punishment and yet still have a super productive career for a long time.
Let that be a lesson, RG3 and Cam Newton. There's nothing wrong with being doughy. It has saved, it has given Ben Roethlisberger years and years.
That's a great point. Ben Roethlisberger is like when you watch the UFC heavyweight division and some guy comes in and he's 240 pounds. You're like, I look better than him.
Yeah.
I look better than this guy. Like, how is that possible? But then he just suckers somebody and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Because he's built like a fridge and he punches like a donkey's kick. Oh, yep. Okay. I get it now.
Roethlisberger looks like Puffy day after a wedding.
I wonder what he would, if he completely shaved and cleaned up, I wonder if like it would just be confusing to people.
Yeah.
Like, if he didn't tell anybody, just start walking around cleaned up.
Yep. It would be.
They wouldn't know why.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got a bunch of controversial takes, Matt.
Yeah.
We can do movies, we can do basketball, we can do Leafs, we can do all kinds of things.
We're not going to do the Leafs. They signed some guy from the KHL that no one's heard of before. We're not doing, like, there's no Maple Leafs to do beyond the fact that I haven't looked at it yet. The top, you know, the all-time Leafs team, TSN, that hockey project they're doing right now has been released. And, you know, it'll be a reminder that the Leafs didn't produce any great stars in the 80s or in the 2000s or in the 2010s till right near the end.
I'm going to make a point, not about that, although I think the fact that they've now got like 41 left-handed shot defensemen, and I think two, if you take Barry and CeCe off the list.
Yep.
On the right side, suggest there might be a trade.
All right.
No, actually, what I wanted to point out was TSN is doing its best seven players of all time.
Yeah, lists. That's what I just said. That's what I was talking about, the best seven.
Okay. Yeah. So what I think this really underscores is that Leafs fans aren't very good and that hockey as a cultural part of the Canadian legacy, professional hockey, is severely overrated. Where do you want to start?
What do you mean by overrated?
Well, we talk all the time about how hockey is part of our culture, right?
Yeah.
I think if you go to most major markets, people couldn't give a damn about anything that happened before about 1980. Like, think about baseball and the importance of baseball to American culture. It's the American game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we can discuss the 1920s Yankees in some detail. Mm-hmm. How many teams, like in the first half of the last century, could you name even one player on?
Like on the Leafs?
On any team.
Oh, not a ton, not a ton. But I think baseball, they hold, like they cornered the market on history. Like I think if we did basketball, you know, beyond naming seven stars, I don't think you could name anyone. I think that's more of a uniquely baseball.
Dolph Schayes. But here's the thing. No, but I'm joking. George Mikan. Woo, power forward for the ages. No, my point is, though, that basketball doesn't claim to be historically rich.
Okay.
Really, basketball starts in the 70s and more earnestly with Bird and Magic.
Yeah.
I don't think they have a problem with that. And football is historically rich in a way, I think more so college football, but not really because the merger didn't happen to the 60s. So what existed before that wasn't really modern football.
Yeah.
But, you know, you still talk about Bart Starr and Johnny Unitas and Joe Namath. Like, those games are still an act. Like, most people have watched. If you love football, you've probably watched the NFL film special on Super Bowl III.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
But with hockey, and particularly Leafs fans, I don't think that's true. We love to talk a great game about how it's so built into the Canadian character. But what we really mean is, ever since I was little and the team I follow.
That's true. We don't, no, we don't do it here. And I think part of the reason is the history of the Maple Leafs. Yeah, no, it's, you know, we celebrate the Teeter Kennedys and the Charlie Conickers here or there, but it doesn't have the same resonance. And also, I don't think a lot of Leaf fans want to look back at the history of it, because when the team, the last time the team was truly great, the Vietnam War was going on.
I think that that's true. And the obvious team and fan base that doesn't fit into what I'm saying is the Canadians.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they do revere their history in a way that Leafs fans just don't. Mm-hmm. We've got Legends Row, and I think it's a quaint little sideshow whenever they unveil some new character on Legends Row. But I don't think anybody really cares, or anybody really feels like they're connected to any of those teams.
Yeah.
I feel pretty connected to the 70s Leafs, but I grew up with them. So when we talk about who is the greatest center of all time, I can have the, well, I watched Sittler play and I watched Sundin play. But what's amazing to me is I know F all about Dave Keon. F all.
Yeah.
And he played, you know, 67 was just 2 years before I was born. It's not like it was 1921. You know, it wasn't like the Toronto St. Pat's. I just don't know anything about the team before I was born.
How much of that is that Harold Ballard and the Leafs in the 80s, it didn't seem like, and I don't like, you know, I didn't really start following hockey until I was a little bit later than the average bear, but that they didn't celebrate their past, you know, like there's all the stories of how many great Leafs from the past wanted nothing to do with Harold Ballard. And as for Dave Keon, his best season in terms of point total was 1970, mm-hmm. or 50 years ago, you know, but I wonder how much of that's just on Ballard.
There's certainly something to be said that he did such an awful job of, it's almost like he, in order to keep prices down, he tried to undersell the team to the market. We're not that special. These players aren't that good. Don't demand more of me.
Yeah. God, he was. You know,
take the names off the backs of the jerseys.
When you look back at just, and it's been said 100 times, it is, they worked so criminally bad, you know, from the early 80s until, you know, like 92, like mm-hmm. for so long. There's a reason why we still wax poetic about Krushinski's overtime goal or Foligno's goal or moments like that. It's because you just had so long with no winning, no player development, no drafting, no anything.
Well, you make a good point about how for a lot of people in our generation, the salt was kind of thrown on the ground between current day and past. Like, they were just such a lost franchise in so many ways.
Yeah.
But I think about a song like 50 Mission Cap by The Hip, where, you know, Gord Downie's singing about Bill Barilko, right? And I think if not for that song, most people would have no idea who Bill Barilko was.
That's true.
But we kind of almost like the idea of this is what we're like as a nation. And mm-hmm. so we celebrate it in song alongside The Hip, but we don't mean it. We love The Hip. Couldn't yeah. care less about Bill Barilko.
We like the idea of we celebrate our history more than what we actually do.
You know, I think that I'm looking at this top seven, best seven that TSN's doing. And I love Craig Button, and he's like the perfect guy to do it because he does care. And yeah. he is super knowledgeable about all this stuff. But I think most of the fans just want to know, like, Wendell or Dougie.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, unless you're talking about the best ever. You know, it's like people who would say, you know, hip hop, you know, who's the greatest hip hop star of all time? And your knowledge goes back to about 2010, which is the way most things operate these days. Anyway, so that's my controversial take, is that I think this best seven thing is proving that in most markets, we know jack all about nothing when it comes to the history of hockey. Not the way the Americans do in baseball.
I would agree with that. By the way, like, just, again, the history. Mm-hmm. Matt Sundin's greatest season with the Maple Leafs was 24 years ago. Gilmore's was 28, and Wendell Clark was 27. We've done so many more years of losing, of bad drafts, of no development.
You know, that said, though, we are quite loyal.
I talk about it all the time. We as a species are more loyal to our sports team than to anything else. You can ask like a Montreal fan, I'm going to give you two options. Or what's more likely? You're going to cheat on your wife or you're going to wear a Doug Gilmore jersey. And they're going to like, oh, I can't wear a Doug Gilmore jersey. I can't go against my team. By the way, did you see the waitress at Moxie's? Yeah, I got a thing going on with her on the side. Like, there's a higher percentage that you're going to cheat. And for women, the same thing. They're going to cheat on your wife or your husband than you are to wear the hat of your most hated rival in sports.
That is an amazing and depressing observation about the human condition.
And I'm not saying everyone's cheating. I'm just saying, like, go and look at the stats. Just type in the stats. Percentage of a spouse who has at least one time, maybe it was just a one-time thing where they got drunk and they slept with someone else. Then type in the percentage of Leaf fans who are right now wearing a Patrick Waugh jersey. I guarantee you the Waugh jersey number is lower than the cheating.
Wow. Okay. So my controversial take has led us to a depressing conclusion. Yeah. Who saw that coming?
Yeah.
No, that's very funny, Matt. I love that. Yeah. Anything else you want to get to? I got a couple other hot takes.
Do them. Hot take it up.
Do you want to do basketball or do you want to do Star Wars?
Let's start with basketball and then get to the controversy with your Star Wars one.
I realized I don't want the Raptors to come back this year.
Why?
Great question. You and I have spent a lot of time, if you go back over these pods that we've done in isolation, talking about the Leafs, parsing out what happens when they get back. And I think it's because they underperformed and we feel like there were things that needed to be resolved that just were not resolved. And maybe a good break will do that, whether it's Morgan Riley's health, but even more so, just the team on paper was not performing at the level we expected.
Okay, so the romance of mystery, is that what you're getting to with the Raptors?
Or, you know, the self-evasion of denial of the facts, right? Like, whatever it is, it feels like there's a better shot at a take two that's going to turn out good for the Leafs than there is for the Raptors. See, I thought about this and I thought, what makes me feel better about the Raptors coming back? And I thought, well, Gasol will be healthier. And, you know, the fact that Kyle Lowry, his body will be rested for the playoffs. That's great.
Yeah.
But I thought, not much, actually. Like, they were, I think, overperforming. I think part of that was because they were playing so well together, but also because other teams in the conference start to pick up the shit show of a bad season, and that just sort of continues to drive them down. The Sixers situation is a mess, and maybe time heals that. It's certainly going to heal Embiid's back.
See, I go the other way. I think the Raptors have an advantage because of the coach and because they're all adults and they've been there before. I think they can pick it up quicker. I think a team like Philadelphia, I think they could be a mess. Everyone has been separated. I don't think you're going to see Durant. Kyrie Irving, I have no idea about. You know, so I think that the Raptors would be, at worst, the third best team behind Milwaukee at number one, maybe Boston at two, or excuse me, maybe Boston at two, maybe not. But then I think Toronto, because – those are adult veterans versus a lot of other kids or dysfunction.
Who was the best team in Major League Baseball in 1994?
The Montreal Expos.
Right. Did they win anything?
No. Nope.
Because there was a strike.
Yep.
And we'll never know. So all those Expos fans can answer that question exactly as you did.
Yep.
They were the best.
Yep.
And we'll never know otherwise.
It's true.
And I started to realize I felt that way about the Raptors. They won last year. Mm-hmm. They're overperforming this year. If the season didn't come back, and then there were changes that happened before the next season, and they didn't win, we would always say, not only did we win, but we were en route to win again.
Yep.
And I kind of realized I would prefer that lie to them coming back and losing in five in the first round.
They would never lose in the first round.
But they could. And if I had to pick my chance, would I love to live in my fantasy world?
Yep.
Or take the risk that it could come crashing down? See, here's the thing. This is why I realized we haven't talked a lot about basketball. Because I don't want to. I want to leave it exactly as it was. Basically, the Raptor season is like a couch in my Baba's house that has plastic over it. It's not for sitting. Uh-huh. It's just to look at.
See, what's interesting here, Bob, what you say makes total sense. I get it. And I'm the one that would usually go in on this about, let's just live in our nice little fantasy world here and leave evil reality. But on this case, I'm willing to take that chance because I just wanted to see what Lowry looked like in the end. I wanted to see just what that would be. So I was, even if it led, I would take that chance that it would lead to disappointment. 100% that would lead to disappointment, even if it meant I just want to see Lowry punch at the wind one more time.
See, and look, I'm not proud of this. It's not like the words are coming out of my mouth and I'm saying, wow, Bob, you're a real hero.
Yeah.
I'm too chicken to face the truth.
Not because you want the beauty.
You know when Jack Nicholson says you want the truth, you can't handle the truth?
Yeah.
He's right. He's totally right. He's talking about me.
Yep. Well, because right now you've got a perfect picture of the Raptors. You know, it's like early on in a relationship when everything is great, when you're in that honeymoon phase and not like, like that's where it is with the Raptors right now. But then you live with a person for a decade and you find their foibles because they're a human being and every human's got foibles.
All right, Kaz. So we're in my office. Like, well, you're not in my office. I am, but you can see inside my office.
Yeah.
The corner by the closet. What do you see?
I see a Toronto Raptor, a little Raptor mascot. It looks like a toy, like a large doll.
And if you look carefully at this framed photo on the wall.
Yeah, it's the Raptors championship parade. All of them sitting together when everything was perfect.
I can sit here all day and look at it. Sometimes I do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I don't want to look at? Mm. I don't want to look at Victor Oladipo coming back off of injury, finding a way to play with Sabonis and beating us in six and losing on home court.
I totally get it, Bob. I'm not even going to try to shame you going, oh, you're not a real fan or you don't have faith in them. I totally get it because right now we have an idealized version of the Raptors because they have given us an idealized version of them, of winning the championship, of a proper title defense, of playing at max level. And if they come back and if they trip and fall, which they could, then it ruins that image. I totally get it, Bob.
There's a sad thing that happens in life where something good happens to you and you become so afraid of losing it that you cease to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And we see this happen in relationships or jobs or whatever.
Yeah.
And I am truly doing that with the Raptors because I wasn't even happy when I saw Bobby Webster answering questions in the paper. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, what my first thought was, Matt? Mm. Why isn't Masai doing it? Is this their way of preparing the fan base that he's gone?
Yeah.
That was actually my first thought. That's pathetic.
Because you've had the highs. You've hit the highest of highs, and you're addicted to it. You know, like right now, it's you know, yeah, you're an addict. And you need the, you know, the not the dopamine, the drip. I forget what it's called when you're trying to get off, trying to wean off some hard drug. And that's what you're on. Methadone. Yeah.
But you know what? As it is right now, I'm just suspended in this wonderful warm bath.
And it's great. I love a warm bath, as you know. Hey, Raptors, by the way, just get an extension for Nurse and Masai Ujiri. Just come on.
I had a big glass of New Zealand white wine the other day.
Sauvignon Blanc,
marble. While I was in the bathtub.
Oh, did you really? You were living my best life.
Yeah, I did. And afterwards, I took a picture of the glass, like not the tub or anything creepy like that. And I sent it to a friend and just said, not giving up, but not trying either.
That's good.
You got anything, buddy?
No, let's get to Star Wars. Let's get to your Star Wars take. I feel like that's going to take ages.
Happy May the 4th.
Happy May the 4th.
I'm going to be critical. So do you want to talk about some fun stuff first before we get into something that's going to make you mad?
Let's just get into what's going to make me mad.
I finally could put words to something that's bugged me about the Star Wars franchise for a while now. And it occurred to me today as I was thinking, how do I want to discuss Star Wars with you, mm-hmm. how to say it. I think the Star Wars franchise is lazy.
How so?
What's the big weapon in episode 4?
In Star Wars, it was the...
The Death Star.
Yeah, the Death Star. Yeah.
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 In episode 6, what's the big weapon?
That would be the Emperor would be the big weapon.
That would be the rebuilt Death Star.
The rebuilt Death Star, yep.
And in episode 7, mm-hmm. what's the weapon?
It's, I believe, a Death Star of some
yeah. sort. Are you starting to notice a pattern that there's 9 movies and in 33% of them, it's the same weapon? They have a whole galaxy of possible storylines. Mm-hmm. Why do they keep going back to the planet blower upper?
It's visually
but
stunning.
But this is what I would say is true. Well, sure.
Yeah.
What this made me come to realize is that maybe more than any other franchise, Star Wars recycles stuff. Now, take the Clone Wars out of it, take the Mandalorian out of it, take all that stuff out of it. Those are kind of like new branches, you know, Rogue One,
yep.
all that stuff is branching out. But if you look at the core 9,
yep.
there's an awful lot of rinse, wash, repeat going on.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe it's not that creative.
My pushback would be when you're in that world and you make 9 movies, so you are making, well, like think about the hours and hours of content there. I think it's difficult to make 9 movies that are all completely separate. That would be my first thought.
Well, J.J. Abrams with the 7th one clearly went back to as many of the old chestnuts as he could. And that was a business decision.
And,
even if you sit there and watch the pacing of the 7th episode,
yeah.
it more or less is the blueprint of the 4th one.
Yes, I agree. And I'll tell you this, I was totally fine with it. I needed that hit. You know,
it was a smart business decision. It was.
Yeah. And you know what? It wasn't.
It was a smart call.
It wasn't a brilliant movie, but it was very satiating for a lot of us. Like, they hit the notes, they hit the music, they hit the timing, the pacing, something that had failed in the 3 prequels. So I recognized that it didn't hit the highest of highs, but from a technical standpoint, it was great. They introduced all these new characters. So I was fine with it as a movie.
It got more than
fine with it. I enjoyed it.
You know, George Lucas started off as a guy who felt like he could be a great director. Mm-hmm. And if you watch American Graffiti, which he made when he was really young, it's yep. like a beautifully told story of growing up. And THX 1138 was, you know, like this student film that made everybody go crazy. It was so brilliantly constructed.
Yep.
And he's obviously a genius at tech and understanding how to make a movie, particularly, you know, the sound, the look, everything. But I remember hearing a story about him from the actors who said basically, like, he gave no notes on set. Like, he was utterly indifferent to how the acting went. He was yeah. like, look, just hit this mark and say it faster.
Yeah. Well, I think with George Lucas is that in terms of creating infrastructure, he's the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of as a just director, he had some great moments, limited, and then that was that. And you know, you put that on your bio, it's still a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's just he had limitations as a director, but as a builder of film, there's no one more influential.
Can you think of an NFL coach who will never get the credit that he probably deserves because the team he put together was probably so good?
Yes.
I guess here it would be like Cito Gaston. The idea that you're just filling out the lineup and then you just try not to mess it up.
I'm going to go old school. Don Coryell, the guy who invented, like, you know, just aggressive downfield passing, like just, you know, like a lot of, you know, just really helping to modernize the passing game in the 70s when it used to be just, you know, 60%+ running, but never got over the top, never got to a Super Bowl as a head coach, but his influence is all over the place. So that'd be the one that would come to mind.
You know, not to take this away from the Stars, but I wonder if the Leafs are going to be a bit like those Chargers teams.
Feels like it.
Yeah, we'll see. I came up with some stuff that I thought was fun about Star Wars and where Lucas came up with the names for different characters.
Ah.
Did you know that the word Chewbacca, the character Chewbacca, was based on the Russian word for dog, Subaka?
I did not. That is...
You've probably heard the famous one that Darth Vader actually comes from the German, that Vater in German is father. And yeah. So he's like Dark Father.
Yeah. Of course, the German language would be used for Darth Vader.
Can't believe it was so short.
Yeah.
But here's one for you, and I think you're going to love this. R2-D2. Mm-hmm. When Lucas was making American Graffiti, he was already doing pre-production and writing on Star Wars. And there was a guy working with him named Walter Murch, famous sound recordist, film editor, worked with Coppola, ton. Anyway, he was on the crew. And he would refer to certain things as if Lucas asked him where he could find something, he would say all the time, it's on R2-D2, meaning it's on Reel 2, Dialogue 2.
Oh, okay.
And he heard that, Lucas did, and jotted it down because he loved the sound of it and thought that would be a great name for a droid. So R2-D2 actually translates in the real world as Reel 2, Dialogue 2. And it's film nerd stuff.
That is, and that makes total sense that Lucas could see that and go, wait, that will play perfectly to an audience. Like just, sonically, you know, that works perfectly.
Do you think if we're organizing franchises, what do you think will be stronger in 20 years, the Marvel universe or the Star Wars universe?
Probably the Marvel one. I think the Marvel one had more hits than the Star Wars one because they get dragged down so much by the three prequels that just really hurt it. I think the Avengers, like, you know, the first Captain America or the second Captain America and the first two Thors were fine. But then Ragnarok came out and then Winter Soldier came out and the Avenger movies just got better and better. That, you know, like the first one and then the last two were so good that I think that it'll be remembered in higher regard.
I'm interested to see what the future is of these franchises in how they decide to let storytellers tell stories. Mm-hmm. Like pretty famously, Edgar Wright was going to do Ant-Man, right?
Yeah.
And people think that his Ant-Man could have been amazing because he was just like the perfect guy for the tone and the character. And, you know, the reports out of it were sort of, wow, it's going to be great. And they fired him because it was too far away from what Marvel would do. You know, you hear all the time, you know, release Zack Snyder's cut of the Justice League, you know?
Right, yeah.
And there was that guy whose name I forget right now, but the Fantastic Four movie that really sucked, the reboot.
All of them, by the way, all of them sucked.
Yeah. The one that had...
Miles Teller was in the latest one.
Thank you. That's it. That's whose name I was trying to... Thank you. But apparently there was a version of it that was amazing, and the studio was like, never... And I wonder if they'll ever let people tell stories.
Well, it felt like in Ragnarok they did. Like that was just very different from the world.
Yeah.
Like, if you compare Ragnarok with the other Thor movies, it was such a departure. You know, I mean.
Yeah, and Ryan Coogler's Black Panther is pretty different than the other ones in terms of like art direction and just how, like the feeling of the world and stuff. Mm-hmm. That one felt kind of more personal. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that Star Wars has allowed itself to do that yet. And that's kind of where I'm going with all this is I think your answer is right, but I think it's because Marvel is going to allow more weird stuff through the cracks as the years go on.
Well,
and the Star Wars, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say for Star Wars, what they've got to do is bottle up what Rogue One was and sprinkle that with the entire, and I haven't seen The Mandalorian, so I can't comment on that, but take what Rogue One did. And sprinkle it throughout. Like I hear Mandalorian is great, but you're going to need to do that.
See, it's funny because I think what they need to do is more like what Last Jedi was. But you hated it.
Yeah.
And I'm not even criticizing you as I usually do for this, because when you have a franchise that's as beloved, right? I think we know more about the history of Star Wars than we do about the Leafs. I know, callback. But there's such a special relationship with those stories that we don't want them monkeyed with. You know, the ones that run parallel to those stories, I think we're okay with. But I don't know. Like, I kind of feel like the Star Wars franchise has been so conservative. There's a reason why all the movies are sort of like middle of the road.
Well, Empire is the best one. And, you know, they went in different directions. I thought the...
That was 40 years ago.
That's true. I thought the final movie was really good. I thought they tied it up, about as well as they can. I just thought that the middle one, The Last Jedi, I thought everything with Luke Skywalker was plodding and depressing and mopey. I thought that the relationship, like some of the love relationships they were trying to do, didn't work. I thought the conflict up in space with... I'm forgetting her name. She won the Oscar this year and was in 400 movies.
Laura Dern?
Laura Dern. I just thought that just went nowhere. It was a very meh sort of movie for me.
I would love to see, I would love to see how dark these franchises will allow themselves to go. And I feel like the answer is not very dark.
Well, and everyone died. Like, they did it in Rogue One. They showed they can do this. They can go super dark.
Well, yeah, they killed a character who was in his 70s. Like, how much adventuring was Han Solo going to do? He had to go. It was like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I'm not talking about, I'm talking about Rogue One. At the end, the main protagonist, they get blown up on the island. Like, everyone, like, on that one, there was sacrifice. Hell, that one, the droid character, when it died, I felt jarred because it just had such emotion and you felt a connection to it. So the potential is there.
I wonder whether a Star Wars will ever allow itself to goof around with tone. And here's what I mean by that. Ant-Man is like a goofy movie, mm-hmm. right? And Paul Rudd is a really good bit of casting for a guy who can, yeah. kind of like Michael Keaton in the original Batman. You know, he's not so far off of the action beat, but,
yeah,
you know, he's still funny, right? He's mostly funny. I'm really curious to see what happens with the second Doctor Strange movie, whether or not they'll actually make it scary.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a lot of creative problems around that. Just how scary do you want to make this purportedly scary movie actually be?
It's a great point. If they could turn it into a real legit sort of like horror, you know, it doesn't have to be a hard R. But if it's a hard PG-13, I don't know. Hell, even an R. No, go nuts. I mean, Marvel, you got enough money. You'll be fine. Make an R-rated Marvel movie. We see Deadpool, but make an R-rated one where it can be a little more horror and maybe a little less swearing if you want, whatever. But I'd be fine with that.
You know, this is such an American way of looking at things, too. And I give them credit because they're amazing at business and it wins. But it's just not the most interesting artistic decision where it's like, okay, we will have our main stuff and it'll be for everybody. And each one will basically be exactly like the last tonally. As soon as they deviated in the tone of Last Jedi, people were like, but wait a minute, this didn't feel like episode 7 or episode 9 at all, right? It's like a McDonald's. It's a franchise. It should be exactly the same in Iowa as it is in Miami. Mm-hmm. And then we'll allow to break off into these smaller satellite groups and create things that are a little more interesting for the hardcores, but it'll never actually, you know, the peanut butter will never get into the chocolate of our main franchise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think both of these things will ultimately be replaced because people will get tired of the tone and something will replace it. And that's the way taste works, right?
Yeah.
And you'll be able to tap into it as a nostalgia trip, but it won't actually be growing or more interesting. I just really hope that the next Star Wars installment feels different than the last one, but I don't think it will.
I'm not as much on that with you because I really enjoyed 7 and 9 and, you know, and I love the, you know, parts 4 through 6. So I don't view it in the same critical lens as you do, but I get what you're saying. I should mention, cause we're almost done here, that our lawyer, Jeff Pollack, he is our Jedi master when it comes to all things, the law. And if you need a lawyer, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. His website is Jeff Pollock with a G, jeffpollock.com. That's jeffpollock.com, who even almost did a full Jedi mind trick on Bob Mackiewicz to almost get all of Bob's will done. Still not 100% done yet.
Hang on, you ready for this one?
Yeah.
This is from Jeff Pollock to me. Do the will or do not. There is no try.
So yeah, he's our lawyer. If you need help with the law in any way, it's a small family law firm. They're fantastic. And we have nothing but trust and faith in them. And they make us feel a lot more comfortable about that part of our lives.
All right, buddy. So we'll hook it up on Friday. And we should probably keep an eye out on AMC because you're doing the morning show all week long. But maybe we'll come up with some questions for AMC.
Yeah, well,
anyway.
I will keep a running tab of what movies on AMC between 2 and 4 o'clock. And we'll work that into Friday's podcast. Today, it's Silence of the Lambs. I mean, damn. I mean, could do a half an hour easily on that movie. But yeah, Friday, send in your listener questions. We'll do AMC-related content as we've moved up to 2 podcasts a week, thanks to the coronavirus and Zoom.
Bye, buddy.
Bob, all the best, and get your kid to bed at an earlier hour. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.